Well, good morning, everyone. I'm Amy Sinden, and on behalf of the Center for Progressive Reform, it's my pleasure to welcome you to this symposium about regulatory review this morning. There's a few people to thank. I want to thank, first of all, the Public Welfare Foundation for their generous support and for giving us this great space to have this symposium in. I want to thank CPR staffers James Goodwin and Catherine Jones, who was welcoming you as you came in, who did all sorts of hard work to make this symposium come together today. And I want to thank Rena Steinzohr, our president. Like so many good ideas, the idea for this symposium came from Rena. So this is exciting. There's a lot of really distinguished people in our audience and on our panels today. There's a lot of people here who have been thinking and writing and arguing about regulatory reform for a very long time. But there's something new today. What's new today is that the political background against which we're having this argument has changed dramatically. And I'm not just talking about the fact that we have a Democrat in the White House and the Democrats control both houses of Congress. With the events of the last year, I think the terms of the political debate have really changed quite radically. I don't know if you've heard, but regulation is not a dirty word anymore. And that means that thinking about what makes good regulation is no longer just a hypothetical enterprise. So there's a lot of work to be done. We've got toys coming from China coated with lead paint. We've got cranes falling from the sky. We have people dying from Vioxx. And after years of neglect, the agencies that are supposed to protect us from these dangers are in a gross state of disrepair. So the Consumer Product Safety Commission, for example, only has 15 inspectors in the entire country to try to keep an eye on all of those imports. The OSHA standard for crane safety hasn't been updated since 1971. But now that we have people in the White House who actually think that regulation can be a legitimate and an effective way to protect the public rather than just a thorn in industry's side that should be removed at every opportunity, the question arises, what should the role of OIRA be? And that's what we want to talk about today. What should regulatory reform look like? Should we even still have centralized regulatory review at OIRA? Or should we maybe redefine OIRA's role? Perhaps to try to assist to reinvigorate the agencies that have been so badly decimated in recent years. And then, of course, there's also cost-benefit analysis. Oh, boy. So I think this actually may be where the robust and lively debate that James promised you in the program may come in. But actually, I had on my run this morning, I think I had an epiphany about the cost-benefit analysis debate. Rena's looking at me. I think this is going to change the way all of you think about the cost-benefit analysis debate from now on. Against my better judgment, my family dragged me to the Star Trek movie last week. So I've been thinking a lot about Mr. Spock. He's sort of a fascinating character. There's something so appealing about him, and yet, at the same time, he has a fatal flaw. You know, and in this new, they've got this new guy playing him in the new movie. He's kind of cute. He's got the same eyebrows, and then they bring Leonard Nimoy in for the cameo. But you know the thing about Mr. Spock. He's a Vulcan, and the Vulcans are like this other race of people who have managed to completely eradicate any shred of emotion from their psyches, right? And but Mr. Spock, there's something so appealing and so comforting about him. You know, it seems like he has all the answers. He's got this big, like, computer brain, right? Because it's all about logic. He has these incredible logical capacities. And he can calculate absolutely anything. So there's this scene toward the end of the movie where, you know, Captain Kirk and Mr. Spock are like, I don't know, I wasn't really even sure what was going on. They're like running through some spaceship and they're, you know, fighting the evil aliens and they're trying to save the world. And all of a sudden, Mr. Spock stops, right? And he turns to Captain Cook and, I mean, Captain Kirk. And Kirk says, what's going on, Spock? And Spock turns to him and he says, do you really want to continue with this plan, Captain? And Kirk is like, yeah, what's the problem? And Spock says, well, you know, Captain, it only has a 3.2465 chance of success, right? And, you know, Kirk just kind of rolls his eyes at him and runs on with his gun drawn, and they run around the spaceship, and they vanquish the, you know, the evil aliens, and they save the world from imminent destruction. But that's the point at which you realize Mr. Spock may have all the answers, but his answers are wrong, right? So today, as we're, you know, engaging in this lively and robust debate, we can just think about it as not the pro-cost-benefit analysis people versus the anti-cost-benefit analysis people. We can think of it as the sort of ongoing tension between Mr. Spock and Captain Kirk.